You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the bonds shared between people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Shared Security Podcast. And this week is my interview with Ryan Davis, Chief Information Security Officer at NS1, and is also someone I used to work with back in the day at Veracode. In my interview, you'll hear about Ryan's career journey from consultant to CISO, his thoughts about the current role of a CISO, and what's changed over the last few years. You'll also hear his thoughts on what the biggest challenge is for CISOs today. And finally, you'll hear about Ryan's advice to anyone that might be interested in becoming a CISO. So, without further ado, here's my interview with Ryan Davis. We've been talking about this, I think, for over a year, I think, having you on the podcast.
I mean, it was definitely during COVID, and we kept trying to find the time on each other's schedules, but it didn't line up. But so happy to finally be able to join you.
Yeah, same. And we go pretty far back, I think, from a career perspective. We both worked at Veracode back in the day.
Yeah.
And that was before you were a CISO.
That was, yeah. Yeah, we worked together while I was still on the consulting side of things at Veracode.
And that was kind of the start of your career journey into the world of being a CISO, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. I think for me, getting to sit on the other side of the table from Fortune 100 CISOs, you know, helping them, you know, advise them on building AppSec programs, it really helped fuel my desire, right? I was like, I want to be sitting where they're sitting one day, right? And so for me, I think kind of after those first couple of years doing consulting, it was a very validating thing, right? Like I was in the right field, was doing the right set of things, but consulting is a very unique set of skills. And I think the biggest frustration for me always, you know, at Veracode or any place else, when you're, you know, leading without any authority, right? You're consulting, you're saying, here's the things to do, here's what I would do, but you don't have an opportunity to really directly affect the outcomes. You can guide and advise and set milestones, but you don't have the opportunity to say directly, like, okay, here's the roadmap, here's exactly what we're going to do. And so for me, that was, you know, I was like, I want to do that.
So what was that kind of drive for you to become a CISO? Because like you said, you were in consulting, you had lots of great experiences. What was it that led you to this?
Yeah. So I think, you know, ultimately, you know, after doing a number of years of consulting, I actually took a little bit more, you know, secondary role, I'll say, in doing more of the technical consulting, right? Less the people side of it. And, you know, when they had particular challenges, I would be parachuted in and say, okay, you know, help us solve these problems and say, okay, you know, all right, here's the plan. Now go run with it. Right. And to me, that was really the kind of the impetus, I think, where I ended up sitting down with Veracode's CISO at the time, Bill Brown. And I said, listen, you know, I've been doing a lot of this. I'd really like to kind of get more involved in Veracode's security program. And so I kind of informally did some things with him and his team. And then, you know, opportunity, you know, struck and he approached me and said, hey, listen, we really need somebody to help manage the information security team here at Veracode. Are you interested? And I was like, absolutely. And so I jumped into that role. And really got to start help building out the team, building out the practice, and got to see really what it takes. You know, when you're on the front side of a security company, right? Everything is just kind of, you know, hush hush behind the scenes, right? You don't really know what's going on underneath the hood. But after getting to, you know, opportunity to really dig in, that only fueled my desire, Tom, to really say, yep, this is where I want to go.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too. Probably a little different leading up a security program at a product company, right? Versus say a bank or some other type of business. Would you say?
Absolutely. I think where security matters to everybody, right? but it matters very differently depending on who you are, who you sell to, what, you know, vertical of business. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, it's what is your risk appetite, right? Like what, you know, what can the business sustain? You know, at Veracode, being a software security company, there is a very high expectation in terms of what the security program looks like and the bars by which you're meeting, because you're handling, you know, what I like to argue, and nobody can really refute me on it, is the world's largest repository of zero-day exploits, right? Because what are we doing? We're scanning software that is, you know, pre-production or, you know, the latest release of something, and we're finding the vulnerabilities in it. So talk about a, you know, a golden target, right? For me, that was always the thing that I kept in the back of my head every single day was like, hey, we're sitting on a treasure trove that would not just be, you know, a problem for Veracode, but a problem for every other company that we were doing business with.
So how did you make it over to NS1 as their CISO?
Yeah, so I, as I wrapped up my time at Veracode, you know, we went through a couple of acquisitions and a divestiture eventually. I took over, you know, the CISO role, and then actually was the interim CIO for a while. So I had all of security, all of compliance, and all of IT. And for me, that was also a validator that like security is really where I'm passionate. That, you know, the bigger CIO role, was, you know, not to say that it wasn't interesting, but it was definitely not where my passion lies. And so, you know, NS1 approached me and, said, listen, we don't have a security program. We're looking for somebody to come and build it from the ground up. And for me, those opportunities don't come around too often, right? It was truly an exciting opportunity to go to a green field and build it from the ground up. Now, on the flip side of it, Tom, it was an incredibly tough role for those first 6 months to a year because I was the guy, right? Like I was all of the things. I was the vulnerability guy. I was the compliance person. I was, you know, but it was really exciting because I got to build it and grow it and shape it into what I believe a security program should look like. And most recently, we just got bought by IBM. And it was a hugely validating moment for me because they went through with tens, if not dozens of folks to scrutinize the program, right? And turn it upside down. And we came out with, you know, let's say that we were perfect. By no means were we perfect, but from the outside, you know, the most they found was a couple of medium vulnerabilities. To me, that was a hugely validating thing considering just 3 years prior, there was nothing in existence.
It's just so interesting that, you know, you've been through so many changes in companies. It's just interesting. I was there at the same time you were at Veracode, you know, being acquired 3 times. And now you've been, you know, kind of acquired again in your new role. So that's this hugely valuable experience, I think, that you could take really to any company.
It is. And the process of going through an acquisition is an incredibly interesting one because you're basically trying to merge not only the company, but the culture, right? And like, you know, Veracode, we had a very strong security forward culture, right? Security is job number one was our mantra, right? It's very interesting to see how that jives with a company as you get, you know, merged into them. And you know, ultimately at CA and Broadcom, we held back on a fair number of things, right? Because our security posture was generally higher than theirs, right? And so we didn't want to be lowering our standards just so that we could have, you know, emails flowing back and forth. And maybe emails is a bad example, but, you know, have intercommunication between systems. That experience, getting to see how a little company who's a pure play, you know, in a space, and then going to Big Co and how they approach security, it's, you know, worlds of difference. Not to say that the problem spaces are that all that different. It's the same problems, but they approach them very differently.
Employee awareness of cybersecurity threats is critical to your organization, but most employees are bored by traditional security awareness training. The vast majority of employees are much more engaged when training is gamified. ClickArmor is the first fully gamified security awareness platform that reduces employee vulnerability by 60%. These days, we can't avoid cyber threats, They're everywhere, and everyone is a target. Employees really need to get better at avoiding cyber threats, like phishing and social engineering. Most security awareness training solutions aren't effective enough to really change behavior. ClickArmor uses a very different approach that employees love. We use proven gamification techniques with psychological drivers that keep employees motivated to learn and improve their skills. Rather than using controversial live phishing tests that anger many employees and provide unreliable metrics, ClickArmor's unique learning challenges help employees learn about cybersecurity in a fun, stress-free way that builds up their confidence. And our engaging simulated threat scenarios motivate employees to improve their skills in a safe and fun environment. Gamified simulators can also extend far beyond phishing scenarios to practice facing dangerous social engineering scams. Our weekly 3-minute challenges provide continuous reinforcement for employees. Motivating employees to participate willingly means higher assurance reporting for compliance and risk management. Simple integration with your employee directory means that deployment of ClickArmor is a snap, and single sign-on makes usage and ongoing management of ClickArmor easy. ClickArmor has been proven to provide better employee engagement, making IT managers' lives easier. If you're tired of ineffective awareness training that hurts your corporate culture, find out how to gamify your security awareness training experience to improve employee resilience with ClickArmor.
So what are your thoughts about the current role of the CISO? You've been doing this for a while, and I think you can safely say that things have changed over the last few years. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, so I think, there's been a number of shaping influences, right? Regulation, of course, has shaped things to a fair amount. There's been some court cases that have shaped things, to a fair amount. I'm thinking like the Uber example. That's a pretty earth-shattering, in my opinion, landmark case, and has very big implications for folks like yourself, right? Security researchers who are trying to do the right thing. And so ultimately, that all plays into the role of the CISO. And I think the biggest shift that I'm seeing is my title has information security right in it, right? Chief Information Security Officer. But more and more, we're having risk conversations. And it's not just risk of information security, right? It's physical security things. It's what is the business impact to that, right? And of course, as information security officer, my job is to always translate things back to the business, right? And what is that, how does that, quantify to the business? But we're looking at things like world events. What are the implications of hosting Ukrainian domains, right? Do we still allow Russians to interact with our services, right? Like, those are questions, historically, right? Like, I didn't have to think about those things. And now we're being kind of thrust right into the center of some of those. And now, with the SEC, regulations, we have requirements to disclose things very quickly, right? In my opinion, right? Within 72 hours, even if we don't have a definitive line on exactly what's happened, we're required to disclose that something has happened. And that, that's a scary proposition because, when I approach somebody, whether it's a customer or prospect or any other outside entity, I want to be able to tell them very succinctly what happened, here's how we responded, here's the data that was involved or wasn't involved. And in 72 hours, it's really hard to grok that level of detail because you're still trying to put all the piece parts together. And so now there's these expectations that you disclose things. And I think we're going to see over the course of the next, couple of years on really how practical some of those things are, because I think it's going to cause a lot more alarm than necessary. A big financial institution will have, be required to report something and it will end up being a nothing, but we'll see. It's definitely a role that continues to evolve. And I think the pressure of that role continues to grow. And, you know, now more so than ever, I'm seeing more and more boards look for CISOs to be advisors because, you know, they don't have information security professionals or practitioners on their boards. And so they're trying to make sure as a board that they're doing the right things and that they have the right oversight. So to me, that's a positive trend, but it also means more work on the CISOs because ultimately it's yet one more set of folks that you have to, you know, make sure that you're having good answers for.
What do you think about this new macroeconomic climate and the role of the CISO? Because I keep hearing about budgets are being cut, we're laying people off. I mean, this is a weird time in our industry. And I've also heard that there's a lot of, we want to have one vendor that does everything for us, not having all of these different vendors to provide things for an organization. So what's your thought on kind of this new world we're living in?
Yeah. So I think there is definitely a consolidation trend. Like all things, in my opinion, it's cyclical, right? You know, we've been really lucky over the course of the last, probably decade or so, where there was kind of a growing investment in security, right? I think we've kind of, I don't want to say we've reached the cap, but there is definitely a plateauing effect that is happening across industry. I'm seeing it, you know, personally, anybody that I'm talking to is seeing it. And to your point, right, what that plateau means is my ability to go and invest in point solutions, that is to say a solution that might be really good at the one thing, gets diminished because what I need to find to make, you know, the most bang for my buck is really I need to have, you know, solutions that can deliver multiple features, functions, services so that I can continue to operate the program because the number of threats that I have to address isn't getting smaller. The different attack surfaces isn't getting smaller, right? There's almost, it feels like daily, some new SaaS solution that somebody wants to start, you know, get up and running. And so we have to figure out how to cover those, but with the same dollars that we did last year or the year before, right? When you have a flat budget, it's like, okay. And that's also really hard to make incremental progress on a program because basically once you get something in place, you can't spend less on it, right? There might be some startup cost or some, you know, initial investment that you have to make, but ultimately you don't get to spend a lot less. And then of course the macro, you know, economy impact is everybody's charging more, right? Like we've seen anywhere between 5% and 15% is kind of been the uptick in our renewals. And so even if I had some extra budget, right, it's just being eaten up by the solutions that I have. So really what it comes down to, Tom, is we're having to figure out how to stretch a buck. We're consolidating vendors, figuring out what are really the nice to haves. And not that that's necessarily a bad thing, right? I'm always all for, you know, spending where it makes sense. But it also kind of hamstrings you in the ability to go and invest in maybe up and coming solutions or things that are, you know, maybe more startup-ish that you can have a direct influence on, but the company just doesn't have the budgetary appetite to do that.
So thinking about all the things that as a CISO you have to do every day, right? Protecting the organization, thinking about emerging technologies, all of these things that you had mentioned. What's the biggest challenge that you're facing as a CISO?
I mean, I think the single biggest challenge is staying abreast of exactly what's happening in the industry, right? You know, you and I caught up just a couple of weeks ago at Black Hat and DEF CON. There is hundreds of new vendors that exist that I've never even heard of. For me, it's like, okay, am I missing something? Is there something that we're not doing that we should be, right? Is there some set of tools or services that we really should be leveraging that we're not? And it's really tough because every single security, you know, company out there is sending you, barraging you with like, hey, talk to us. We'll solve all your problems. but it's really hard to kind of make sense out of the noise, right? Like, what are the problems? And so, you know, I try really hard, you know, podcasts is a great example, staying up on, you know, latest, you know, news trends, talking to peers, right? That's actually one of the biggest ways that I try to stay, you know, like talking with other CISOs and saying, hey, what are you guys working on right now?
That's huge.
Or, you know, what new technologies are you using that, you know, you would recommend or, you know, say that something that we should look into. But that's probably the biggest challenge, right? And I think the other challenge, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the struggle to find and retain good talent, right? It is a very much, while, you know, the economy as a whole has, you know, kind of in a contraction phase right now, and there's plenty of people that are looking for jobs, finding good, high quality security talent is hard, and retaining them is even harder. You know, I just saw a report in the last 2 weeks that said the average tenure of a security professional is something like 18 months. 18 months, right?
That's not a long
you're
time.
Barely getting somebody on board and
yeah,
trained and really up to speed in that amount of time, right? And then you're losing them. And then you have to go through the cycle all over again. And that's really frustrating. So, you know, you got this ever-changing threat landscape, all these new tools that can potentially help you, and you're trying to keep good people and, you know, make sure that you're investing in them such that they don't get bored. It's kind of like juggling, and not just three balls, like seven balls, and trying to make sure they don't drop.
So kind of speaking on the people front, what advice would you give someone that might be an aspiring CISO or someone that one day says, you know, I really want to be a CISO. I want to do that job. Like, what advice would you give them?
Think long and hard about it.
Question your career aspirations.
No, honestly, I love my job. I really do. It is probably one of the few roles where you get to truly blend the people, the technology, the business, and it's just, it's like a true hybrid role, right? But you got to be moderately good at all of them. You can be better at maybe the technology side, or you can be better at the business side, but you have to be able to speak those different languages and be able to have those interpersonal conversations. Ultimately, if I was looking to get into the role, there is no right path. That's probably the single piece of advice that I would give. Continue to grow yourself, expand your horizons, learn new technologies, talk to people, networking. The more I go in my career, the more I realize it is not just what you know, but who you know that is.
Yes.
It's true. There's no question about it.
100% agree.
And for me, now where I am at in my career, when I have a problem, I'm like, you know what? I know who I need to call. Right. And that's hugely invaluable. You can't quantify that. You can't put a price tag on that. So if you're looking to become a CISO, continue to grow your network, invest in yourself, learn new technologies, and put your neck out. Right. You don't make big jumps. I didn't land a CISO gig by saying, oh, you know, maybe somebody will offer me a CISO job one day. Right. Like, I had to work hard to get there and prove that that I was worth it. And for me, I started in help desk, right? That's, you know, at the very beginning of my career in college, I was doing, you know, help desk at a real estate company. And then did some systems administration and networking, and I did compliance for a while, and then I did consulting and technical consulting, and then manager of information. There is no right path.
No,
but
there isn't.
Ultimately, it's your set of experiences and your ambition. To me, that's what really matters.
So how can our listeners find out more about you and things you got going on?
Yeah, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Pretty easy to find. Ryan Davis on LinkedIn, CISO at NS1. You can also find me there. Yeah, and please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always looking for new opportunities to, you know, do a little advising. Whether that's, you know, personal advisement and helping coach folks in their own careers, or, you know, doing some company advising as well. So, Tom, I have to thank you for having me on. Truly a pleasure.
Well, it's been just an absolute pleasure as well. Great to finally catch up, get you on the podcast since we've been talking about this for a while. Great conversation. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.